Chapter 9 of The War of Antichrist with the Church and Christian Civilization. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. The War of Antichrist with the Church and Christian Civilization by Monsignor George F. Dillon. Chapter 9. The French Revolution. I may here remark that the conspiracy of the Illuminati and of Freemasonry generally was far from being a secret to many of the courts of Europe. But then, just as at the present moment, it had friends, female as well as male, in every court. These balked the wholesome attempts of some rulers to stay its deadly intrigues against princes, governments, and all order, as well as against its one grand enemy, the Church of Jesus Christ. The court of Bavaria found out, as I have said, but only by an accident, a part of the plans of the Illuminati, and gave the alarm. But, strange to say, that alarm was unheeded by the other courts of Europe, Catholic as well as Protestant. A revolution was expected, but, as now, each court hoped to stave off the worst consequences from itself, and to profit by the ruin of its neighbors. The voice of the Holy Father was raised against Freemasonry again and again. Clement VIII, Benedict XIV, and other pontiffs condemned it. The agents and ministers of the Holy See gave private advices and made urgent appeals to have the evil stopped while yet the powers of Europe could do so. These were all baffled, and the court of the Grand Monarch and every court of continental Europe slept in the torpor of a living death, until wakened to a true sense of danger at a period far too late to remedy the disasters which irreligion, vice, stupidity, and recklessness hastened. The lodges of the Illuminati in France, meanwhile, carried on the conspiracy. They had amassed and expended immense sums in deluging the country with immoral and atheistic literature. Mirabeau, in his Monarchie Prussienne, volume 6, page 67, published before the Revolution, thus speaks of these sums. Masonry in general, and especially the branch of the Templars, produced annually immense sums by means of the cost of receptions and contributions of every kind. A part of the total was employed in the expenses of the order, but another part, much more considerable, went into a general fund of which no one, except the first amongst the brethren, knew the destination. Cagliostro, when questioned before the Holy Roman Inquisition, confessed that he led his sumptuous existence thanks to the funds furnished him by the Illuminati. He also stated that he had commission from Weishaupt to prepare the French lodges to receive his direction. See Deschamps, volume 5, page 129. Discontent was thus sown broadcast amongst every class of the population. Masonic lodges multiplied, inspired by the instructed emissaries of the remorseless Weishaupt, and the direct work of Freemasonry in subsequent events is manifest not only in the detailed prophecy of Cagliostro, founded on what he knew was decided upon, but is still more clearly evidenced by a second convent held by the French Illuminati, where everything was arranged for the revolution. The men prominent in this conclave were the men subsequently most active in every scene that followed. Mirabeau, Lafayette, Fouché, Talleyrand, Danton, Murat, Robespierre, Cambaceres, and in fact every foremost name in the subsequent convulsions of the country, were not only Illuminati, but foremost amongst the Illuminati. Footnote. It is commonly believed that the encyclopedists and philosophers were the only men who overturned by their writings altar and throne at the time of the Revolution. But, apart from the fact that these writers were, to a man, Freemasons, and the most daring and plotting of Freemasons, we have abundant authority to prove that other Freemasons were everywhere even more practically engaged in the same work. Louis Blanc, who will be accepted as an authority on this point, thus writes: "It is of consequence to introduce the reader into the mine which at that time was being dug beneath thrones and altars by revolutionists, very much more profound and active than the encyclopedists, an association composed of men of all countries, of all religions, of all ranks, bound together by symbolic bonds, engaged under an inviolable oath to preserve the secret of their interior existence. They were forced to undergo terrific proofs while occupying themselves with fantastic ceremonies, but otherwise practiced beneficence and looked upon themselves as equals, though divided in three classes, apprentices, companions, and masters. Freemasonry consists in that. Now, on the eve of the French Revolution, Freemasonry was found to have received an immense development. Spread throughout the entire of Europe, it seconded the meditative genius of Germany, agitated France silently, and presented everywhere the image of a society founded on principles contrary to those of civil society." Monsignor Segur writes on this: "See to what a point the reign of Jesus Christ was menaced at the hour the revolution broke out. It was not France alone that it agitated, but the entire of Europe. What do I say? The world was in the power of Masonry. All the lodges of the world came in 1781 to Wilhelmsbad by delegates from Europe, Asia, Africa, and America. From the most distant coasts discovered by navigators they came, zealous apostles of Masonry. They all returned penetrated with the illuminism of Weishaupt, that is, atheism, and animated with the poison of incredulity with which the orators of the convent had inspired them. Europe and the Masonic world were then in arms against Catholicity. Therefore, when the signal was given, the shock was terrible, terrible especially in France, in Italy, in Spain, in the Catholic nations which they wished to separate from the Pope and cast into schism until the time came when they could completely de-Christianize them. This accounts well for the captivities of Pius VI and Pius VII. The cardinals were dispersed, the bishops torn from their sees, the pastors separated from their flocks, the religious orders destroyed, the goods of the church confiscated, the churches overturned, the convents turned into barracks, the sacred vessels stolen and melted down by sacrilegious avidity, the bells turned into money and cannons, scaffolds erected everywhere, and victims in thousands, in hecatombs, especially from amongst the clergy. In one word, all the horrors summed up in the revolution, and the end, which was the great unerring power of all its actions, namely, to see Christ cast down from his altars to make way for the goddess called Reason." End of footnote. Some disappeared under their own guillotine, others outlived the doom of their fellows. Constantly, the men of the whole conspiracy had understandings and relations with each other. Weishaupt, at the safe distance of Coburg Gotha, gave them his willing aid and that of the German Freemasons. This concert enabled them to float on every billow which the troubled sea of the revolution caused to swell. And if they did not succeed in making France and all Europe a social ruin, such as that contemplated at Wilhelmsbad, it was from want of power, not from want of will. Position and wealth made many of them desire to conserve what the revolution threw into their hands, but they remained under all changes of fortune Freemasons, as they and their successors are to this day. Perhaps under the influence of oaths, of secret terror, and of the sect, they dare not remain long otherwise. One or two individuals may drop aside, but some fatality or necessity keeps the leaders Illuminati always. They, as a whole body, remain ever the same, and recoil before political adversity, only to gather more strength for a future attack upon religion and order, still wider and more fatal than the one which preceded it. They are not at any time one whit less determined to plunge the world into the anarchy and bloodshed they created at the French Revolution than they were in 1789. On this point, let one of themselves speak. "I have had," says a Scotch Freemason, horrified at the results achieved by the fraternity in their work up to 1797, "I have had the means to follow all the attempts made during 50 years under the specious pretext of enlightening the world with the torch of philosophy, and to dissipate all the clouds by which superstition, religious and civil, used to retain the people of Europe in the darkness of slavery. I have observed the progress of these doctrines mixing themselves and allying themselves more and more closely with the different systems of Masonry. Finally, I have seen them forming an association having for its sole object the destruction, even to the very foundations, of all the religious establishments and the overthrow of all the existing governments of Europe. I have seen that association extend its systems with a zeal so sustained that it became almost irresistible, and I have remarked that the personages who have had the greatest part in the French Revolution were members of that association, that their plans had been conceived upon its principles and executed with its assistance. I am convinced that it exists always, that it works always silently, and all appearances prove that not only its emissaries strongly endeavor to propagate amongst us its abominable doctrines, but that there are even in England lodges which since 1784 correspond with the Mother Lodge. It is in order to unmask these, to prove that the ringleaders are knaves who preached a morality and a doctrine of which they knew the falsehood and the danger, and that their real intention was to abolish all forms of religion, to overthrow all governments, and to make of the entire world one scene of pillage and murder, that I offer an extract of the informations I have taken on this matter. I have quoted these words of Robeson to show that as early as 1797, the connection between Freemasonry and the French Revolution was well understood. Since then, Louis Blanc and other Masonic writers have gloried in the fact. "Our end," said the celebrated Alta Vendita, to which I shall have to refer presently, "is that of Voltaire and the French Revolution." In fact, what Freemasonry did in France, it now labors, with greater caution, to effect on some future day throughout the entire world. It then submitted, with perfect docility, to a great military leader, who arose out of its own work and principles. Such another leader will finally direct its last efforts against God and man. That leader will be Antichrist. End of chapter 9.